afternoon. Good afternoon. This is our bargaining session on October 19th, 2022, between the bargaining teams for the United Faculty of Florida at UCF and the UCF Board of Trustees. Brianna, do we have minutes that we can display from our last meeting?
Looks good to me.
Pilat, there's one sort of friendly change I'd like to propose. On point two, I'd like to call what we have proposed ground rules.
Okay. Yes. Rules. Yes. 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 That's a good point. Ground rules. Yeah.
And I guess that would be in the handouts too.
Yeah, I had also changed the distributed the meeting agenda instead of for today's meeting because that just so yeah she made a change and it didn't stick. So okay, yes, we will make that change.
Okay, and Robert's name is not there. It's not that Robert was there, but he's not in the bargaining team. Is that what it is?
I think that that's right.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Okay, anything else on the minutes? Okay, thank you, Brianna. Now, if I may, I'm going to try to share. The next thing that we had talked about, Talat, was kind of reviewing where we were on the ground rules that had been suggested. So I'm going to try to share, but... not having much luck finding what I'm looking for. So please bear with me a moment. And hopefully you can see the ground rules that we had introduced at our last session on the 21st. There was I think there's some very good discussion that took place during our meeting, and there were some suggestions that were made to modify these, and those were incorporated in here. And Talat, this is exactly the same document that was sent to you on the 22nd.
There was a small change we had suggested. I think you probably have it there.
Did I miss something?
Robert, there was something that, didn't we had a small change or was
Well, there was a suggestion that you had, made, yes, about, you know, if somebody's having trouble connecting. And then
if they disclose who they are, if they have a phone number, if they identify themselves so it goes in the minutes or it goes on record, that would be fine if their name does not appear in the Zoom.
I guess this is all right. Robert, can you repeat that? Because that's different than what I had seen.
If someone is calling in from the phone and they identify themselves and they are connected to a phone number, has their name, their name can be
recorded in the minutes.
Recorded in the minutes. And then they can't attend the meeting.
Be honest, is it easy to capture all of that?
I think it would be right after when say phone numbers are not sufficient identification for attendees. I think that's the one that we were thinking of. That if they could come on and give their name, which could be recorded in the minutes, then we would allow them to be there.
I guess what I'm thinking is how do we make sure that that name is recorded? And I'm wondering if that's automatically taken care of by Zoom with the recording. Does it list all the attendees?
Because the recording is going on, so as soon as they speak, that will be recorded.
Well, if they speak, but it may be a person that's just witnessing.
Sure. I think the understanding was that if somebody joins who's only listed with a phone number, the person keeping the minutes or leading the meeting would ask them to identify themselves, and then the person keeping a record would have that information and it could be used for the minutes.
Okay, then I think this is very similar to a point that Talat had shared with me. And a concern that I express is I think that'll be disruptive to our meetings.
It would only be allowable, I believe, at the very beginning.
At the beginning. So at the very beginning, we would do that. They couldn't just come in at any time.
Well, I don't know how to stop people from connecting during a meeting.
I log in directly. I don't know, Briannis might know this. Is the direct link given out to everyone, or does she actually have to physically let everybody in?
No, it's given to everyone.
Okay, so then that's not, that doesn't solve the problem. I think we could say something like within the first 5 minutes of the meeting, those unable to log in other than through a phone number must identify themselves. People will be kicked out of the meeting if they don't do that.
What if we did the following as a practice?
Okay.
When we go through the minutes, which usually take us a couple of minutes at the beginning, before we start into the rest of the agenda, we ask anybody who's there with a phone number to tell us who they are.
Yeah.
And then there may be people that join after that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm somewhat comfortable saying the ground rules are okay. I don't want to make them so complicated. We say, well, we're going to do the minutes. But we're recording this, and this is what we're saying we want to do. And I'm seeing some nodding heads. Robert, would this solve the problem for you?
Actually, Chuck, before Robert, I had a brainwave. So when you say phone numbers are not sufficient identification for attendees, comma, unless they identify themselves within the first 5 minutes of the meeting. Unless at the urging of the chair or whoever you. They identify themselves within the first 5 minutes of the meeting.
Well, I'd rather just say at the beginning of the meeting.
At the beginning of the meeting. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Because this is a situation that may come about even with one of us if we are on the road or something. Yeah.
It's possible. Okay, I'll get that change incorporated. Sure. and get that.
Robert, I didn't mean to cut you off. If you had something more to say, please go ahead.
I mean, the only thing I'd add, and this, I don't think this has to be part of the actual ground rules, but Chuck and Talat, we might want to agree that when one identifies themselves, whoever has access to the chat types their name in the chat, so the record's in the chat and accessible during the meeting if there needs to be a recording of the name and it's sort of proper or.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do that.
I think we got, yeah.
Well, Brianna, so what I'm worried about is putting too much of a burden on you during the meeting to try to keep track of that. Do you think that's something that is sufficiently easy to handle?
Yeah, I can do that because I'm keeping up with who's in the meeting.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
All right. Thank you. All right. We'll get that.
Updated
and I'll send that out to you, Talat.
Great.
The next thing I wanted to talk about briefly is some of the data that you had requested on PDLs that we had had sent to you. And I hope we're looking at something different.
No, that's it.
Chuck, for the record, you're displaying an untitled document. So we would title it sort of PDL applicant information for the past 3 years.
Well, what it's the title of the file as it appears on the screen is PDL breakdown.
Okay. For the last 3 years, though, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yes, thank you, Charlie. So this was interesting, I think, to look at this data, something that I hadn't really looked at myself. So it was very interesting to see. And I think we learned a little bit about how this process has worked. As I look at this, I see that about two-thirds of the PDL applications have been for one semester PDLs. 21 of 31 were for one semester. Mm-hmm. There also are some additional ones that I'm not counting in there. There were people who applied, but the committee in 2019-20 and in 2021-22 had some that they chose not to rank. They said, kudos to the committee. This is what we all hope that they do. They're very discerning. They look carefully at these applications so that the very best ideas that are proposed are the ones that are actually awarded to our employees. So it looks like the committee's doing a good job, and I'm excited.
Chuck, I had a question. In the 21-22 under College of Sciences, there are three that got one semester. And then there were two applied for one semester and three applied for two semesters. So those five did not get approved. Is that right?
That's right. There were
okay.
A lot. Thank you very much. I was going there next.
Okay.
I appreciate that. And that is exactly something I wanted to point out, that last year, a year ago, this time, these applications are due today, as it turns out.
Uh-huh.
A year ago, when these were submitted, the College of Science submitted 8 applications. There were a total of 11, or actually 14 PDLs awarded last year, and it is entirely possible that if the committee had ranked them, that you could have had all 8 of the proposals from the College of Sciences in the top 14. It could have happened. And this is the kind of situation that we've been trying to describe as one that's a concern to us, because if the College of Science were to lose 8 instructors and lecturers, because these are all in-unit employees, that would be a tremendous hardship if they'd all been awarded. Based on 5 of these folks applying for one semester and 3 for two semesters, I'm counting potentially up to 44 courses that would have had to be covered last year just by the College of Sciences because of the professional development league. I think another number that's somewhat interesting is libraries. There's been a big increase both in libraries and in the College of Sciences. College of Sciences went from 1 to 3 to 8 applications. The library went from 1 to 1 to 3. So over the last 3 years, those two units, if their employees had been ranked very highly by the PDL committee, could have had a big impact on those units. With the libraries, it doesn't affect courses per se, but there may be some specialized duties that some of the librarians have in the library that would impact the operations of the library as well. So I think it's interesting to look at these and see what's happened over the last couple of years.
So, but the number of applications that were actually possible is much more than this, right?
Because I don't know the total number that could have applied, but I think it's possible, yes, that there could have been more. Mm-hmm. When someone is awarded a PDL for one semester, as the collective bargaining agreement reads now, they're paid 100% of their salary. They do that one semester at full pay. And Talat, as a former chair, just as I was a former chair, you know, what hits me there is all of a sudden there are courses that have to be covered and there's no money coming into the unit to pay for replacement instructors because the employee is getting 100% of the salary. So when that happens, a unit's got to find a way to come up with money to pay for replacement instructors or cancel classes, which might mean other sections of courses where there are multiple sections are larger, and it ends up being an additional work assignment for some of the other employees in the unit. Mm-hmm. When the PDLs are for two semesters right now, the employee's paid at 75%. So the 25% of their salary becomes available to the unit to help find replacement instructors. And that is helpful, but it's still, if it's a full year, if it's two semesters, that could be eight courses that have to be covered. And while I don't want to say that there are no financial issues with sabbaticals and what we've been calling professional development leaves, there is some financial impact on the unit, but I think a much more important impact is on the work that needs to be done when someone who's carried so much of the effort in the department is not there and has to be replaced somehow. Either it's bigger sections that the other faculty are picking up, or there are adjuncts that are hired for those replacements. So as I looked at this table and thought about it, it helped me better understand how the units are impacted by these awards. And when these PDLs are awarded, there's a committee that's operating at the university level. With the sabbaticals, they're college committees that I think are really very well able to assess how significant the proposed work is to the college and the unit. And it's a little bit harder to do that at the university level. And then all of a sudden a dean finds out, oh my gosh, I got three employees of mine that just got PDLs. What am I going to do about that? So, you know, we certainly heard from the deans, not so much about the money, although the money is a concern. It's how do we get all this work done with these people that are on these leaves? So there really are some impacts. And then, you know, we looked at what you had suggested to us as a possible replacement for Article 22. We looked at it very, very carefully. We shared it with the provost so that he's seen it also. And, you know, one of the things that you had proposed is to increase the amount of money that is paid to the people on sabbaticals and professional development leaves. And what that's going to do is have a greater impact on these units, because there's no money, even if it's a two-semester sabbatical or a two-semester PDL, there's no money that's released back to the department to help find replacement instructors. So again, because we're not able to replace these people, if the sabbaticals are paying, the sabbaticals and the PDLs are paying 100%, it's really going to be a challenge for the department to find instructors, and they may have to really end up assigning additional courses to other in-unit employees. So there would be an impact that I think a lot of people would feel as a result of that change. But it was very helpful for us to be able to look at your thoughts on Article 22, and, you know, we had conversations with faculty excellence, with the provost, and certainly with our team thinking about it. And as a result, what I'd like to do is show you what we have as of today for Article 22. And the changes are minimal in Article 22. So I'm putting that up, and I hope you can see that.
Yeah.
There's really only two changes that have been made since we last got together, and we had identified a typo in here that occurs twice, once under sabbaticals, once under the professional development leave, which I'm trying to train myself to start calling assigned professional development responsibilities instead of PDL. But on lines 40 and 153, we had both come up with the idea we need to change this fifth year to the sixth year. Mm-hmm. So in this the document that we'll be sharing with you later on, Talat, the fifth is gone. It's replaced by the sixth, but I just highlighted it to say those are two things that I think we had,
really?
Just in the course of our conversation last time, we had agreed on those. Mm-hmm. We still are interested in some alternative to the word leave. And what's been proposed here, as it was last month, is assigned professional development responsibilities, as it says in lines 41 and 42, formerly called professional development leave, so that it's clear as we go from one version of the CBA to the next, to one version of this article to the next, how those things fit together. The only really substantive change besides a lot, it looks like there's a lot of changes just to implement this APDR notion in place of PDL. The only truly substantive change that we have is that with the APDRs, with what we're now calling professional development leave, we're still proposing that those would be one semester at full pay, and that two semesters would not be an option any longer. That's what we're proposing. And it's simply because of the reasons I was suggesting when we're looking at that table. When we go to two semesters on a PDL or an APDR, right now there's some money that's returned to the unit to help with replacements. That's nice. But that second semester, the second time that somebody's out and they have to be replaced again for three or four courses, it's really a hardship on the units. These particular employees, by and large, have been hired with their primary responsibility, almost exclusively teaching. I understand that there are some lecturers and perhaps some instructors with a small research assignment, but by and large, their principal responsibility is teaching. And these awards to employees are different from sabbaticals. The sabbatical is taking an employee who's assigned a greater variety of responsibilities that includes research, and they're being relieved from their teaching responsibilities for a time in order to, in nearly every case, focus on their research. That's what they propose to do, to develop their own research a little bit further. So they're swapping responsibilities in one of their primary areas for responsibilities in another primary area. When we start talking about the APDRs, we got someone who's hired primarily to teach. And that's really what their role is. It's a very, very important role at the university. And when they apply for an APDR or PDL, they are not assigned what their primary reason for being hired. You know, they really were hired in order to teach, and now we're not asking them to teach for a time. So it really has a big impact, because they are, the people on APDRs are really not participating in the main life of the unit while they're on that APDR. They may be doing something of value, they may be doing something that's going to impact the program in the college later on, but they were really hired to teach, and they're not teaching. The faculty members that are on sabbaticals, at least in their case, they may not be teaching, but they were also hired to do research. And so we think the impact of the PDLs and the APDRs is really substantial on the units. And we'd like to see those opportunities continue for employees, but we'd much prefer that it be one semester, even one semester at full pay, as it is now. Extending sabbaticals and the APDRs to two semesters at full pay is just an incredible burden on the unit. Not only how do we replace these people, how do we get these courses covered that they normally teach? There's no money coming back to the department to support that effort. So it's really an additional cost that the unit has to bear in the case of a two-semester award at full pay. We also looked at the suggestion that you had for a research sabbatical for an untenured faculty, a tenure track faculty member. And we think that's something that's not necessary in the CBA. This is something that can be done today. A chair or director can assign a faculty member a 100% research assignment for a semester, for example. And I think there are some colleges, Talat, I think you even suggested in physics there was a break.
We do it all the time.
And, you know, I think in engineering, computer science, a lot of the faculty get that as well. It may not be 100%, but they certainly have a lighter teaching assignment, usually in the first year or the first 2 years. So we sort of look at this and say, some of that's happening already when the units are able to do that. They do try to take advantage of opportunities to give junior faculty a chance to really get their research going. It's a little bit harder to say we're going to mandate this, that it's going to happen to five different people each year in each college. There's some colleges that don't have five assistant professors. That's not possible. I'm guessing if some of the larger colleges may do that already, may even exceed that because of lighter teaching assignments for some of the assistant professors. So that's where we are on Article 22. And I hope with the data that we shared, the data that Jude actually requested about PDLs, which I thought was informative to us as well, it's kind of helped us see visually why what we're proposing in Article 22 is so important to us. And, really saw the impact that the PDLs have on the functioning of the unit. So that's where we are right now on Article 22, and we would be happy to entertain any questions you have. And Talat, we'll send you this version when we're done.
Yeah, so actually, I think this is good that, you've stated your points. And we've also had a lot of discussion on this. And that's where I think your table was also very helpful. And so what I think we would do because we have we have also made changes in what we proposed last time. after we were talking to you. And again, one thing that I would say up front is that, you know, and maybe I'm being optimistic, but I think we are not all that far apart. But I think what we need to do, I mean, in the discussion, I do want you to understand where we are coming from. You know, it's not that, you know, and as you said, I've been chair, so I know how one has to, you know, make sure that all classes are met and what happens when a number of colleagues get sabbatical or professional development leave. As far as how to name them, we also have suggestions. But I think what, before we present it, let me say that I think what we, you know, we are trying to address this in the framework of where we think the university wants to take, I mean, the administration wants to take the university. So what we are thinking of and what when we hear the discussions in, you know, whether it is the present president or the one before, and so it's always that, you know, we are aspiring for excellence. We are aspiring to be among the leading public universities in the country. And there's no question that, you know, in some regard, I mean, there's some things about UCF that are very exceptional. And what we are trying to do, and I think we are in a have the potential to do, is to make continue to make UCF a very important university in the context of United States. It is the largest university in the country. And when you're the largest university in the country, you are being looked upon as to what you do and how you, you know, what kind of products that you produce. And I think, you know, and I wouldn't be here for all this while if I didn't believe that we have the potential to actually deliver, despite the rather large, you know, exceedingly large student to faculty ratio. Okay. So what the where we are coming from is that this is what we think the administration wants, to have excellence, to be rated as one of the top universities. And this is where we wanted to go too. And that is where then the question comes in, how do you do it, right? So one scenario would be that we had only tenure earning faculty. You know, if you, you know, and again, I'm sure Chuck, you also come with a similar background. If you go back 20 years or so, most of the leading universities would have tenured or tenure earning faculty. They would not have non-tenure earning faculty. We realized with all the constraints and everything else that, you know, that is not a something that can be done. We can't overnight change everyone into tenure earning. So then the reality on the ground is that we have to have both people who are on the tenure earning track, and we have to have people who are not on the tenure earning track. I don't like it. I don't think most of it, you know, we wish everyone were in a position where they were on the tenure earning track, but we have two tracks. So I will also mention, and I'm very aware of this because I recognize that my light teaching load, because I teach one course a semester, that teaching load would not be possible if my colleagues who are on the other track did not teach in my department three courses a semester, right? I would not have this real benefit of being able to do research. So then the question is that how do we take UCF that it continues to grow towards being an excellent university, and they look upon us as a real model of something to follow. And that's where we think that having these two parallel tracks on more or less equal basis helps in not only in raising the faculty morale, but also gives us, you know, the ability to kind of say that, look, yes, we do have two tracks of faculty. However, they have benefits which they won't get in most places. Because I think, you know, when I first came here as chair, I and people said, you know, we will be hiring some lecturers. And I said, no, I think we should only be hiring tenure earning. And then, of course, you know, this was just before 2008. And then they realized that, you know, there was hiring freeze. And then how do you, and the number of students just kept on increasing. And so we had to do this. So I think if you want to maintain or continue or to reach excellence, I think we should treat the two tracks on similar basis, okay? So we heard what you said. We recognize that, you know, not only classes have to be made, but jobs in the libraries and digital learning and all of these have to be done. So we have made some changes where we think there can be much more of a say from those who have to make these ends meet, you know, have to make sure that the work gets done, that they have a say. So I think what we do,
should I share it now? Okay.
Yeah, why don't you share your screen? And so then I can go through the points one by one. And again, you know, I mean, there's still room for discussion. And so, you know, we're not, you know, this is not going to be the final word. We totally understand. So let me go.
Can you see this okay? Is the font big enough?
Yeah. Can everybody see?
Yes. You get going though, I think, Eloy, did you want to say something?
Yes, I wanted to follow on the ideas that Tala is sharing with us. Thank you very much, Tala, for sharing those ideas. You were talking about, well, first you said that it would be nice to have every faculty in a tenure track position. I think every faculty chooses to have the type of position that fits better their goals, right? So having everyone on a tenure track position perhaps is not the best thing. And I say that I have a brilliant student who graduated with me, and he chose to be a lecturer because he was passionate about teaching and he didn't want to go through all the struggles about that goes with tenure track, right? And all the research. So having the two paths is actually very important because strategically it provides a functionality. And having faculty who can focus more on teaching allow other faculties to focus more on research. And I think it's that synergy that both sides create what really will help the institution to achieve its aspirational goals of becoming the top 50 university. So I want just to add that because it's not necessarily better to have all tenure track. I think both coexisting together and building that synergy is really what's strengthening the institution. And that's all.
Yeah, no. So, you know, we can argue, but and as I said, I also changed my mind. You know, once, you know, when I entered, came here in 2006, that's the opinion I had that it should be all that. But I also see how if we are going to do, I mean, it's not feasible to do the other. So I agree. And I think from the point of view from where we are coming is that, yes, that is, we could even argue that that is the way to go. But if that's the way to go, let's treat both with the same kind of flexibility and opportunity. I think the most important thing that we're talking about here is opportunity, right? So let me go step by step, and again before I go, did anybody else on either team want to say anything? Because we did have Chuck's proposal there, so I'll take a break and just say if anybody on either side would like to say anything.
Talat?
Yes.
Hi. Yes, I would like to say that I think that professional development is important for both tracks. Not just because of everything that you said with regard to where the university is going, but also with regard to the way both types of faculty are evaluated, that professional development is an important part of evaluations for promotion, and that I think that this professional development, whatever we're calling it, with the instructor, lecturer types of tracks, is very important in terms of making sure that their skill level is where it needs to be to provide the best education for the students that we're serving. So I just wanted to add that too. And also that, you know, if we go to the one semester instead of the full semester, individuals who are on an instructor lecturer track who may be able to be eligible for something like a Fulbright fellowship, become a Fulbright scholar, would not be able to avail themselves of something like that, which would be a wonderful thing for the university to be able to tout, as well as a wonderful experience for that faculty member.
Yeah. Thank you, Monique. I think those are excellent points. I mean, particularly the one that you're saying, that because we have a career ladder, thank goodness, in the lecturer ranks, then how do you achieve that excellence? And how do you actually raise the bar for achieving those excellence unless you have the opportunity to do that? Yeah. Anybody else?
I just have a practical question.
Yeah.
Right now I'm including the comments, but I'm pretty sure that decreases the font size for you. So I will switch back to...
No, it's big on our screen, Claudia. I think
it's big enough.
It's legible. Thank you for asking, but I like having the comments and think it's super helpful to see what your rationale is.
I would have added them, but yeah, if this is big enough, I will just shut up and just leave it like
that. If you asked a lot, I'm always the one who's asking
bigger,
but this is legible for me, so I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. I was going to ask for that, I think. So let me go line by line. And of course, so what we've done here, and I think, Chuck, you are in agreement that you had suggested here to move sabbaticals, move the word leaves, which we did. We have kept, that is so funny when I have, Claudia running the screen because I'm trying to go down the screen, but okay, Claudia, you can scroll it. Yeah, right. And so this is great. Okay, thank you. That's it. So we have left the one intact as we did before. And again, as I'm saying, that we will have discussions on this. So let's keep it the way we had, where we had the full pay. The reason, so let me come back to just to re-emphasize this point here. We did change the research sabbatical and called it the pre-tenure research semester. So what we have here, and I think I see the problem, because I don't think every college, I agree with you, and we should make a change here, because if a college is very small, then I agree with you that you cannot have 5 research semesters. Okay, I think that's one thing that you were implying. So we can discuss that, but what we were basically trying to do here, and again, more details can, I mean, you know, how it works out, is that it's the same thing. How do we bring everyone to a higher level? And this is again something that we feel that, I mean, we are convinced that if you're going to be an excellent university in all regards, it is not just enough to have a few departments or a few units being excellent, but all should be given that opportunity. And so in physics, when I came as chair, because of where I was before, we had the rule that tenure earning faculty member got at least one semester for just doing research. Typically, it was the first semester, but some people could take it in the third semester. It just depended on, you know, how they were working. And if they didn't think that they would be ready to start their lab, they would put the first semester into just getting the lab ready, or vice versa. So this is something that we have done in physics for the last 15 years that I'm aware of. And I have a feeling they do it in chemistry as well. I know they do it in Creole as well, and probably in engineering, I'm not aware of. But what we felt is that if it is in the CBA and the number we can talk about, what is reasonable, then that opening is there then, right? And that is certain number of people who are in tenure earning position. I mean, we could say that all tenure earning faculty, but this is a debate. And I see what you're saying, Chuck, that this is something that could be done at each unit, but but what we are really fighting with this idea that why is it that certain units are able to move forward and others are not, and how do we bring it so that there is this opportunity? Because we all know that colleagues who are given a research semester, right, they do end up doing well, and that does help them defend their tenure. I mean, make a promising package for tenure. So I think that was the reason for it, and we can have more discussion about it. So that was that. I think the rest of it is just changing the numbers, and hopefully we've got it, the math right there. Then I think let's move on. The sixth year is fine. And then what you're saying is that you can't get that pre-tenure research semester more than once. Then sabbatical, that's all, no change there. So let's move on. Okay, so then, okay, I think the length, okay. So that also we had before, that's no change from the last one. And again, that's up to discussion. Okay, I think that's also, now we come to, so we did a lot of thinking about what could we name this program. We looked for the letter L to see if there's anything that we could replace instead of leave. Could there be anything starting with L so that PDL could be maintained? We had all kinds of ideas, but then finally, we thought that how about professional development program? So that becomes PDP. And that again, because we have a sabbatical program, and a professional development program. So it's kind of a positive twist to it. And then the language here, what you see here is that we have made a number of changes, and the changes, and please, take a look and see if we have succeeded or not. We've tried to put everything in parallel. So we've got sabbatical and then we've got PDL. And that sentence where we have in sabbatical the sentence, and we felt that, that should be the same thing here. That is, while PDPs may be provided in relation to an employee's years of service, they're not primarily a reward for service longevity. We have that language for sabbatical, so we just did it here. Okay, so again, we have the PDP. And it's the same thing, just changing there. But what we are really, we think that it's really important. And Monique, who herself is in that position, said it better than I could, that the reason for the two-semester sabbatical, and again, as you will say, not sabbatical, PDP, is that under the conditions, we are not saying anyone can be given that. We are talking about people who can get funding, who have a grant, who have got a sabbatical. These are situations, and people who they're working under have a say in whether, just like a dean does. So we've tried to put that in so that, again, the selection system is done at the college level, and when there are no colleges, we have to worry about how it is done. So it's making, it's allowing that opportunity while still giving the supervisor the opportunity to be able to say something. So let's move further. So this is okay. So essentially, so here are the main changes. So application for a professional development program shall be submitted in accordance with college or division deadlines. Okay. And then what we say here, each application should include the two-page statement and so on, as now, the expected increase in value of the employee to the university. And then we say here the college and the employee's discipline and or unit. And then again, we changed the word leave to professional development. We have crossed out this sentence because it's been put up on top there. Then we say the employee's immediate supervisor, for example, the chair or the unit head, shall be given a copy of the application when it is submitted, just like it is in the sabbatical. A college-level professional development program committee shall be elected by and from the employees eligible for the professional development program. The committee shall equitably represent the departments or units of eligible employees. Then employees who indicate they plan to apply for a PDP are not eligible to serve on the committee, just like in sabbatical. A committee chairperson shall be elected by and from the college-level professional development program committee. The college-level committee shall review professional development program applications and shall submit a rank list of only recommended employees to the dean or dean's representative or division head. And then we have crossed that out because we have a ranked list already. Then the next is, I think the rest is just changing of the name. Then again, bringing here, absent a legitimate business reason other than staffing or fiscal consideration, the dean or dean's representative or division head shall make PDP appointments from the rank list and consult with the committee prior to an appointment that does not follow the committee's list. In the event that the dean or the dean's representative or division head decides not to offer a PDP professional development appointment to an employee on the list, they shall consult with the affected employee. Okay, and then I think, again, if it goes on, if staffing or fiscal considerations preclude a professional development program from being granted, the employee shall be provided the professional development program the following year or at a later time as agreed by the employee and the college or the unit. The postponement of a PDP by the university does not result in any postponement of a subsequent PDP application by the employee. And then we write here, in the event of an exceptional opportunity for an employee to participate in a prestigious academic award or activity for which deadlines prevent application during the normal application process, the dean or division head may award a PDP outside of the above defined process. All employee eligibility requirements must be met and all PDP terms defined below apply. So again, this is just to make it parallel with sabbatical. So now we come to terms of the professional development program. I think we are again doing the same thing as we did in sabbatical, that the two be commensurate. We have taken out this, the lines 241 to 244, because you know, they have to have a program, they have to provide a report, and they have to be evaluated. So we thought that this was redundant. And again, it's not what we do with people who go on sabbatical. So a report is necessary. The annual evaluation should reflect whether the person did or not. But, that's what that is for. The rest of it is basically fine-tuning, and I think that's it. So comments, questions?
Are there any questions where you want me to go back to a particular line?
Excuse me, I was muted there for a second. I got to get used to this technology again. I apologize. Talal, I wanted to thank you for sharing that with us. I can tell from some of the changes that you're suggesting, we've been communicating well with each other and we're hearing each other, and I appreciate that. And Claudia, you did a great job driving. Appreciate your help on that as well. We need to take a look at this and look at it very carefully, because I think we're also in agreement that this is an important article, it's an important concept for our faculty. some questions that occur to me right away is, for example, the college committee that's suggested for the PDP. There are a couple things that I mentioned as potential concerns. I bet everybody in your bargaining unit would say they're working too hard. There are a lot of things that they're asked to do. They're stepping up and doing a great job, meeting their obligations with teaching, research, and service. And what we'd be doing is adding another service obligation to the faculty. And I'm sensitive to the amount of service opportunities we put out there for faculty. In the particular case of the PDP, even if we elected committees, I'm not sure how they would function, because unlike sabbaticals that are assigned to colleges, there's a certain number assigned, there's no number assigned to the colleges with the PDPs or the PDLs. So, you know, I don't know how to guide the committee in terms of its ranking. You know.
But we should do that too, Chuck, right? I mean, the first thing would be that we probably will have to think along those lines.
Well, you know, the biggest year we've had was last year with 14 people on PDLs. That's roughly one per college. So that's, but it doesn't work out that way, because in fact, the College of Sciences had three, and the College of Arts and Humanities had two among those 14. So I want to look at this. I want to think about this, because I can tell how much thought's gone into this, and I want to think about it. But that's just kind of my knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to implement these college committees, but I'm very excited about the idea that we're trying to incorporate a role for the dean, mm-hmm. who's going to have to deal with the consequences of the professional development program, which hopefully are only positive, but in the short term, there's a question about staffing, there's a question about finances that have to be addressed.
Go ahead.
I think another thing about the committee that we would have to think about and perhaps discuss, I don't think there's any mention in here about how big the committee is. And it's, you know, some colleges getting a good-sized committee together for what may not be a huge task could be a lot of effort. So we need to just look at this and think about it. But I really appreciate how I think both sides are paying attention and listening and trying to understand where the other side is coming from. So I'm very grateful that there's even a mention of, you know, input from the dean. We'll try to figure out how can we make this work for everybody.
So, you know, Chuck, I mean, a thought was that, you know, deans would like to see their units rise, right?
Absolutely.
Be excellent, right? So if by allowing, so of course, the only, you know, the detail, the rest of it is detailed. The only thing where we differ is whether we should be giving two semester PDLs. So, or whatever you call it, PDP now. We did actually reach out to the bargaining unit and get some information from them, because one of the things that was of concern to us is that, do they even care? You know, I mean, if most, because a lot of people would rather get the one semester, which is fully paid. Let's say that we agree on one semester being fully paid and two semesters being 75%, for example. Then, you know, the way it is right now. But a number of the response was amazing, and so people would like to have that opportunity, particularly, you know, if somebody is writing a book, you know, the units where these things make a big difference, right? And so if you're thinking about a college that sees a faculty member being able to take advantage of this and can get a grant to support it and has a program, then this is really going to make them be able to get to higher heights, and so they may want it. It's something to think about. So again, the thing is also that if you are getting some money, of course, the question also will be, where does the money come from? But we also know that, when we have priorities, we do find money for them. I don't know, I have to tell you this, Jack. Ed Neighbor, remember Ed Neighbor?
Certainly I do.
Okay, so he said, there's one sentence, I quote it all the time. So we went to him with this plan for the studio mode that we were going to do of instruction. And in the College of Sciences, the dean and the associate dean had told me that this is 2008. He said, no way you're going to get a penny from anybody. But anyway, I said, okay, let's at least go and ask. So we went and Ed was there and we did the whole demonstration. We had gone very well prepared. And at the end of it, Ed said, well, send me more material and let's talk about it tomorrow. And so we go back and he had by that time gone through everything that we've given them. And he came back and he said, I don't see why we don't teach in this mode and we will find the money. And Jack McGuire says, there's no money around. He said, Jack, we can always find money. So I called it.
What was Dr. Neighbor's discipline?
I know. Well, I'm not going to tell you.
It seems to me it might have been somewhere near your area, was it?
So you think there was a conflict of interest there? But he said, how could we be teaching physics in any other way? that was good. It was very nice. So anyway, but we do know that if we have to think about it, there was this SIP initiative, right? I mean, we did find money for projects that we believe in. So, development of human resources is a very important project. Taking UCF so that everyone rise, is a very important project. And I think we are coming from that perspective. And, Jack, I'm sure knowing me and everyone else in this team, that that's where we're coming from. It's not from any other.
No, I think everybody here, everybody that's participating in this meeting wants UCF to be as great as it can possibly be. We're all trying to do whatever we can.
That's right.
To make that happen. And we understand that. We're going to have to do it within certain constraints.
Of course.
And perhaps there are times when the constraints aren't as tight as they might otherwise appear, as Dr. Neighbor may have suggested to you. That's possible.
So I think one of the things that would be really great if it emerges from all of this is that we are at least in agreement that what we want to do is to make this university something that we are all proud of, and that we treat everyone here who contributes to making that as equally as possible. I know we can't do total equality, right? But I think we basically do it so that they have opportunities and they have career paths and so on. So I think
I like to say that we treat everybody well. There are different jobs that people have, there are different expectations or different assignments, but I don't think there's any reason why we would not treat everybody well.
But opportunities and access is very important. And that's what we need to provide. Because people need to be able to get to where they want to get.
Okay, does my team have any questions about 22?
I'm ready to move on.
Well, Todd, thank you very much for sharing the Article 22 with us. We look forward to going through that very carefully.
Chuck, do you mind if I just ask, we have a few people in the audience, if anybody would like to say anything? I mean, we have a few people, a few visitors. Would anybody like to say anything? Okay. Thank you.
But the last thing that I wanted to bring up is talk just a little bit about Article 23. As we did with Article 22, when we got Article 23 that you had proposed, we shared that with the provost, and Jan has also seen it. We're not, unfortunately, not in a position where we can respond yet on Article 23. Right now, the budget isn't finalized, and we may have a university budget tomorrow after the Board of Trustees finishes its meetings. There was some information that was shared with deans, I believe, last week. And every dean that I talked to since then is telling me how great it feels to have received a budget cut. So the deans have all had to endure budget cuts. So right now, we just simply don't know what we're going to be able to provide in terms of a response. But what you've shared with us is helpful for us because we begin to see, you know, what the UFF and its members are thinking. So that it's helpful to have that, and we appreciate having that. If I were going to characterize the Article 23 that we saw last time, it would be bullish. It's optimistic, and that's bullish in the best way. Like the stock market is bullish. You had proposed, you know, a 7% increase for this academic year, 7% increase across the board for next academic year. Right? You know, I say that's optimistic because, to my knowledge, we've never done a multi-year agreement on what would happen with salaries, and we're also talking about a substantial increase. I remember one time, I believe it was in 2014, when Dale Whitaker just arrived as provost, there was a 5% increase that year. That's the largest one that I know of. And I'm not sure that one was completely across the board, but that was the largest one that I remember. So, you know, we don't know what we're going to be able to come back and offer as an alternative. But it's very helpful to know what's important to your members and what you're thinking about. There also are other things that were proposed in Article 23. There were larger promotion raises that were talked about. There was an increase in the number of incentive awards, and the amount of the award for the Excellence Awards was increased. And what I was going to throw out as a question to you and your team, as we look at what, you know, I'm calling an optimistic 23, which is where we can start talking about where we are. Can you help us understand priorities? You know, what's the most important thing in 23? And you know, that can be information that we can pass on to the provost and other leaders as we try to figure out what are the things that we can come back and offer to you. So,
you know, I mean, we could caucus over this, but I think one of the things, I mean, the most important thing to bargaining unit members is really the salary increase. You know, I mean, with what they've seen with inflation and with the prices rising, that is really the most important. I think the rest of it, you know, we can talk about it, but I think, and because this affects everybody across the board and everybody, particularly those who are at the lower salary range, you know, it's a big, you know, I think this is the most important. Yeah. And people,
I don't want to say I didn't anticipate that answer. I fully expected that's what you'd say, but I think that's helpful for us to confirm that with you.
Actually, in addition, to dovetail into that a little bit, Talat, I heard what you said about the lower paid employees. So is it more important to have a percentage, or is it more important to figure out sort of a bulk payment that everyone receives? sort of like, okay, everyone gets $1,000 versus everyone gets 0.5%, or however that work, the math works out. I'm just using round numbers.
Well, again, you know, this is something that we should have a longer discussion on that. And you know, there's some things that we did last year, right? And we did have, we did get feedback from the unit as well, members as well about that. And I think, you know, we're very aware that people making less than a certain amount are being affected a lot more than those making more, right? And so yeah, so I think that is something that we should think about for sure. But again, exactly what percentage and all that, we'll have to go over that.
Well, there's a question, there's a difference between a percentage, which gives everyone, quote, the same, but not, it's not the same when you're at the lower end particularly, but versus a bulk payment that feels less for the people at the top, but really helps the people at the lower end. That's something I just want you to consider as we continue talking.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for an answer today, but as something you want to consider.
Yeah, and I think we will discuss that.
Considering there's a limit to the resources, right?
Yes. No, we will look into that, because that would, and again, I think regardless what we want is what goes into the base salary rather than a one-time payment. But we'll think about that as well.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. We have that information.
But
I
was just going to say that answer I should have caucused with my team, but I think it's in everybody's mind.
I'm not asking for an answer today. I'm mostly wanting you to discuss for future meetings. Now we're going to meet pretty soon.
Yes. Chuck? Yes. We're meeting on November 9th.
Yes. Yeah. We'll have to get to work, see what we can come up with.
Yeah. But it would be great if you have something by then. That would be very helpful.
We would like to. I can't make a promise, but we would like to.
Claudia.
Do you anticipate having, just to like, you know, anticipation. Do you anticipate having a proposal from the BOT team for Article 23 on November 9th?
I really don't know what to say.
Okay, that's fine.
Claudia, the last thing I want to do is tell a lie.
I understand. I was just sort of wondering.
Fair question. It's a very fair question. I wish I could give you a very direct.
It's a pretty quick 2 weeks. I'm not super confident at that point. I just thought I'd say that. But again, we can't promise one way or another. So.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. And I guess what's not clear, the reason Charlie's saying it's 2 weeks, even though it's 3 weeks from today, we're out for a week. There's a conference that we'll all be at the first week of November. So we've got a little bit less time than we normally do, but we're going to do what we can.
Okay. Anybody else? Robert, did you have anything to add?
I do not.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think we've gotten through our agenda for today.
Yeah, I think so. That's good.
All right. Well, thank you all very much. It's great to see you all. And we'll look forward to seeing you in about 3 weeks.
In person.
That's the plan. Yep.
Can't wait.
All right.
All right.